Welcome to episode 8 of the Think Wildlife podcast. Today we have Vamsidhar Potula. Despite having over 15 years of corporate experience, he is now the Chief Operating Officer and Registrar of Ashoka Trust for Research in Ecology and the Environment, one of the leading ecology research institutes in India.
So welcome, Vamsidhar. It's great to have you on this podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Anish. Glad to be here.
My first question for you is, after 20 years of corporate experience, what made you change the wildlife conservation sector?
Yeah, primarily, it all goes with an inclination of yours to be in the environmental friendliness, or you talk about the ecological environment around you. So the primary drive is that you'd love to be something which you passionately want to do. It can be with wildlife, it can be with the conservation, or it can be with various flora and fauna and all that. That's how it starts. And that is one of the reasons probably. And then eventually, during the course of your corporate career too, if anyone has an interest in that, you get driven towards initiatives of the respective corporate in terms of CSR or in terms of the work we do in anything which is more relevant to the environment. That is where your kind of inclination goes. And then that draws you to be part of some social initiatives, social sector. So, for example, in case of mine, I've been an active Rotarian, and within the Rotary, then I've been involved in a lot of projects which were driven by environment, ecology. It can be restoration, it can be rehabilitation of lakes, or it can be something to do with, of course, earlier, you know, it was all about the understanding is environment is about more of plantations and things like that. But when you deep dive, you understand that that is not the only one. The bottom line is that it's all about your passion, but there is a lot you can do with the corporate rich experience. I mean, that's how I felt like, you know, it is time for you to really go back and give back. And at the same time, you can leverage your past experience.
So how have your experiences in the corporate sector helped you guide such a prestigious wildlife institute such as ATRI?
Yeah, I would say it helped me immensely. The one thing which I could bring in is the institutional building, because institutions like ATRI are very, as you rightly said, unique because we have multiple entities. Like ATRI is an organization which has got a think tank and a research organization. We have an academia which offers the PhD and the master's program, and we do have a grassroots level NGO in our community conservation centers. So when we are having such a complex, very unique organization, the institution needs to be built. So there definitely comes a stage where it needs to transform and be relevant with the times. And more importantly, the transformation I'm talking about is not that you are inwardly focused, but you should also look at the outside world to be more relevant with the changing environmental challenges. While ATRI has always been adept at it, things like communications, for example, it can be mostly a research-to-research communication which was in focus. So if you're talking about public engagement, if you're talking about citizen sciences, civic engagement, that's where the entire shift is moving from a research-to-research communication to a research-to-public kind of a communication. So that is in one step. And the other aspect is in terms of even today, while most of the nonprofits are mostly depend on fundraisings and fund from various donors, philanthropies and HNIs, and it can be foundations. But what is changing the shift is that the expectations of this donor community is also moving from making an output driven to a more outcome driven, and which very clearly indicates there is an impact which are very clearly seen. So the social impact part of it, the public engagement part of it, has really become more core now. So what I could bring with my experience is these kind of changes which actually puts you into the map more actively. And of course, keeping aside the interdisciplinarity which is already existing in a organization like ATRI, but how can you leverage that? Because you're very unique but it's like a best kept secret, you know, what people don't know how unique and how, you know, different you are from the other organizations. So I think the way it helped me is that to the potential or the kind of, it's like a surprise element of many people don't know about what E3 does. This is a huge to communicate, excepting for people who are in this domain or who does a little more deep understanding and research into it. Otherwise, there's a lot people don't know, and that's what we are trying to unleash and trying to uncover and tell to the world the stories of what E3 does, which is making a significant impact to the, you know, the ecological ecosystem here. Yeah.
And how difficult was this transition from the corporate sector to the non-profit setup?
Yeah, I don't find there is a major challenge in the sense that, again, as I mentioned to you, it is all about your primarily, it is driven by your passion, one. Two, the basic thing which the differentiating factor between a corporate and here is that we need a lot of perseverance and patience here, because things happen. You cannot push it the way you are pushing it in a corporate world, because you are more driven by objectives. And the moment the objectives are driven, you sometimes go, you know, all out and do it. Here, going all out is not practically feasible in a physical scenario, because it is dependent on various external factors, which it depends on various, you know, elements which are not under your direct control. So that is one thing. But the biggest thing which I realized is that the efforts are almost double. I mean, if people think that getting into this sector is something which is very easy and cozy, it is not so. Your efforts are almost 2x. But the best part is the kind of output satisfaction or the kind of fulfillment you get is more than 10x. So that's the primary difference. You know, that is where you get motivated to do, because if you're working for, let's say, 8, 10, 11, 12 hours, there's no pain or no stress you feel in these kind of sectors, because everything is actually somewhere contributing to something which is impactful. I mean, that is where the transition becomes easier for people who look in that angle. If someone looks at it in an angle of, you know, thinking that you need to put less effort physically or mentally, then it might not be the right way of looking at things. But someone who's looking at the effort versus the output or the satisfaction, I think this is a place.
What advice would you give to younger people who are willing to make a similar transition from the corporate sector to the non-profit?
Yeah. So for people who wanted to really shift, I put it in two levels. One is younger generation who are probably starting their career or almost, you know, in the initial stages of a career. If they want to shift, yes, that shift for them is more towards, you know, beating the monotony of what they're doing in a process-driven organizations or so-called, very structured ecosystems where they're working on it. But for them, it is all about they can come here and pursue the dreams of really, you know, experimenting, trying to innovate, being a little more creative and really get the hang of what they would have dreamt of being in a field. It can be in terms of wild or it can be in terms of nature or anything. So for them, it is exciting because they're pursuing their passion, that they're doing what they're loving. At the same time, you know, they're pursuing a career. Career is also being formed. And of course, if someone with the interest of learning more or trying to, you know, advance in terms of research, they will love it. That is one. For a mid-career professionals who are like maybe people like me who spend a decade or two in the corporate life, very active corporate life, this is again a sea change in the sense that for them, as I mentioned to you, it's all about a complete paradigm shift in the way you look at things. You know, your effort remains the same. Again, I was telling, but then the output, the satisfaction, the entire. And then if you're really getting motivated by the kind of impact you're making and trying to build an organization, that's why, you know, people who come from, especially from the corporates, especially in the mid-career, they bring in a lot of value because the 2 decades working or a 1 decade, 2 decade, whatever the experience they bring in from the corporate or from any other sector will have significant, because that is where the interdisciplinarity comes. And it's all about applying those learnings here, because what you bring in is not there in the system here, which means that a typical conservation, environmental, ecology, you know, sustainability organizations don't have that, understand the nuances of how do you really communicate effectively many a times, or how do you really manage a larger organization, how you build organizations through probably seeking more funding and all that stuff. So they bring in a lot of value there. And they also get to learn certain nuances of how to take things in a phased manner, not rushing and jumping, which is what they were doing before because of the environment there. So here it is all about persons and perseverance. So if they're able to gel these two aspects, believe me, they are going to be the most successful folks, even compared to the people who have been in the system for long. But and that's all about, again, an attitude of a person to really take up such kind of a change. Are you really willing to take this change? The moment you take that change in a consciously, I don't find any reason for not people not being, forget about being successful, but not being really fulfilling and kicked up with that role and responsibility.
Other than scientific training, what are some of the in-demand skills required in the conservation sector?
Scientific training goes in terms of understanding of the work they are doing. But what really matters is that because most of these conservation organizations, they are more focused on the technicalities many a times. But things like communication, which I was telling, because communication becomes very, very critical. You may call it as a science communication, but even otherwise a communication to get an outreach. Because for any conservation today, if at all you have to really show an impact, there should be a very active outreach. So to have an outreach, your communication should be very strong. The next one is the developmental efforts, what you call it as an ability to build relationships and, you know, start connecting with the organizations to raise funds or to ensure that you build collaborations and partnerships. So this is one area which people have to have beyond their technical skills. So these are the main ones. One is communication, one is fun, and of course, the organizational skills. Because at the end of the day, if you're not a team player or if you're not a team leader or trying to build people together and actually bring in that kind of inclusiveness, this happens only when you get exposed. So these are the skills they should actually own, or at least try to consciously build if you are to be a successful a leader or a person in this domain of conservation, environment and ecology, or for that matter, in the social sector, as a whole.
ATRI is quite well known for their research work and capacity building work. So on the other end, you guys also work with environmental education at grassroots levels. Talk us through the programs you run at ATRI's community conservation centers.
Okay. So, like I mentioned before, ATRI is a unique organization which has got a research and the think tank part of it. Then, of course, we do have an academy, which is what you mentioned, which is offering a PhD program, which is truly interdisciplinary PhD program. And now we have introduced Masters in Conservation Practice, which is more focused on the hands-on practice in conservation. And we have a grassroots level organizations which are predominantly driven from our community conservation centers, where there is a landscape based or a place based research happening. And we work across Western Ghats and Eastern Himalayas. So when it comes to conservation education, apart from our master's and PhD program, we take it up actively even in our community conservation centers. With the communities we work with, in terms of how do you really make these communities sustainable and make them aware of their own landscape. And when I say that, each of these landscapes are rich in biodiversity, rich in in terms of forest, wildlife. There are multiple issues they have, and all the time there need not be a specialist or there need not be an NGO working there to solve that problems. If communities are kind of enabled, or if they are being, built into a way that they became sustainable, including their livelihoods. So our education, conservation education, starts at a very grassroots level, where we say that you know your environment, you know your locales in terms of the kind of landscapes in which you are born and brought up, and how do you really conserve it. So that is what we call it as ecosystem services. So they use a lot of, products, or a lot of livelihood is dependent on these environments. But if they're well educated, they know how to conserve it, at the same time build a livelihood of it. So it can be non-timber forest products. How do you really harvest them, train them in something which is in a small social entrepreneurial kind of way, build their own small enterprise. It can be things like honey processing, or if you talk about invasive species, where you know you try to see train them in kind of craftsmanship in terms of making some product out of it. And these are all the very basic level skill building, education, at the same time ensuring there is a livelihood. That is the part of the grassroots level. And at the larger level in the institution or in the organization, we are talking about building environmental leaders. These are the ones who actually are trying to bring in, because with all the challenges of environment, right from whether you call it as a carbon sequestration or a climate change and various aspects of it, everything is dominantly covered through this conservation education. That's how ETRI involves in actually imparting. So we talk about developing interdisciplinary knowledge, and we are true to that, that interdisciplinary knowledge, be it from the aspects of social sciences, natural sciences, or for that, you know, in terms of socio-political thing, we will ensure that has been done, including the forest. For example, in the forest, we make sure that the Forest Right Act, which is very, very critical for the communities there to know what their rights are and bring them their rights back to them, probably get their land for their own livelihood. These are the lot of initiatives which ETRI has done, and we continue to focus on that because we believe in this. It's not just the glamorous species. We are talking about all the species. That's where the overall biodiversity comes in, and the conservation education is focused at ETRI.
How do you think environmental education can improve in India?
Okay. Environmental education actually can improve when there is a conscious effort by each one of the citizen to start becoming environmentally conscious. And education need not necessarily be someone has to do an undergrad or a grad program, or for that matter, research in environment. It starts from having that awareness and consciousness. And that is precisely where organizations like ETRI, or for that matter, of this breed, who are developing interdisciplinary knowledge, have to actually disseminate it to all the people and ensure that it is the outreach is important. And that's precisely the communications play a role. So like I was mentioning before, it's not just internally only the people in this domain are aware of it. It's about how you communicate to the public, how you bring this public engagement or citizen sciences. So once these organizations are involving people and making them aware of what are the consequences of these, you know, various environmental challenges we are facing, right from a very basic level, they need not talk about a carbon sequestration. They need not know about a carbon, credits and things like that. But the basic fundamental things, if they're able to do in the right way and conserve it. So there are two ways, one is you conserve it or you restore it. So restoration may be a more scientific way of doing it, but conservation is something which people can do in their own small way. So it starts with that. In terms of education, the environmental education is moving from typical environmental sciences and studies to practice. So the more you're practicing it, and then there is an impact being shown. Otherwise, the studies might confine to academia or a research domain, but through papers or whatever, but is it really making an impact? So that's the challenge. And
what is the role of schools in environmental education?
I think I strongly foresee every at a very young age, that's very a formative stages of early stage. It can be even small as in the age group of, where you are in the kindergarten level or in the early childhood level, people have to bring in that awareness about basic resources. So we have natural resources. It can be a water conservation. It can be, sanitation. It can be something to do with, things like waste management or just a basic awareness campaigns. And I think we have seen the new age schools or even the governments of late are bringing in some curriculum in their practice, wherein they're trying to incorporate that kind of modules. And then the kids are trying to learn. That starts at a very basic level. So they become conscious about the nature of the environment, about the kind of, trying to be. But as they grow as responsible citizens, and then eventually they understand the basic science of what the environment is, need not be scientists. And then it's all about how you create that, excitement. So environment today or wildlife today or wildlife conservation today is all about a lot of glamour to it. So many times as they grow up, they might look at the glamorous animals and say that they get attracted to it. But lesser known species, that is what we say in ATRI, that biodiversity is, it includes all the kind of species. It can be, we focus on even the smallest of the insect or a bug, which contributes to the biodiversity or the conservation. And we so, and these kids have to know, because in the initial stages, they start learning things which actually come out with the fear that, okay, let us say a spider is scary to them, or let's say even a bug is, the moment you see a bug. But they don't understand if there are some modules. That's what we are trying to bring in, to know how the birds or how the smaller species of animals are really useful to the society or useful to the environment, and they can easily understand. At least you start making them like them by which your small the pictorial storytelling kind of stuff, where you are making the kids, start actually liking this species, rather than from the day one you find an insect, you kill them, or things like that. I think this is very critical, and it comes as a system. But I am glad that there has been a significant improvement, change we are finding, but there's a long way to go. But yes, this can be brought in by more youth like you guys who in organizations like you, the TWF. I'm glad that you started that initiative and bringing that awareness. I've seen your blogs. I can see your coverage across. And you've been very actively trying to propagate and bring in a very small, simple language. I think that endeavor is more important, a small storytelling or a small book or whatever, which probably makes them take things in a different, look at things in a different way and start liking it rather than trying to look at as a, So that way, yes, there's a lot that can be done. But I think it should be incorporated as a small module or a subject or a course or a small curriculum in each of these various levels of education, apart from whatever the core subjects they have.
ATRI is celebrating its 25th year this year. So how are the celebration planning going? And you guys are hosting a massive event at the IISc campus. So talk us through that.
Yeah, so it's really a very exciting moment for each one of us at ATRI, because 25 is no small achievement, and especially 25 years of building interdisciplinary knowledge. And of course, developing and future environmental leaders. ATRI has, to its credit, around 35 odd PhD students who passed out, and they are in different parts of the world in terms of contributing to conservation, environment, ecology, in academia, in the social sector, in the nonprofit sector, and of course, in research organizations across think tanks. That is one thing we feel proud. And in terms of our contribution to the policies, in terms of a contribution to the environment and development, in terms of forests, or in terms of our social impact and innovations. So all our centers, each one of them have their own great track record of their contributions. So we are going to showcase all our things. So the event is actually the themed as life and lives, lives and life, whichever way you call it. And we are wanting to showcase this in four things, waterscapes, landscapes, naturescapes, and four. So that is what four thematic areas. And at the same time, we are also having certain interesting public engagement kind of topics, which is called a cafe controversy, whether it is like, do you really need to feed animals? Is it right? And do you really need to plant? What is it? Do you need to plant trees or you should not? Or where need to do it? Or do you need to really go organic? These are all very public interested topics, which people have a lot of controversy. And so we have people from both the pro and con. They're trying to debate and come to it. So these are all, and they're quite an interesting for the public. There are board games on environment conservation, which is going to be interesting for the kids. And then we are also having a sound booth, which says about, you know, how do you identify the various sounds of, it can be various species of animals or birds or whatever. So otherwise we have a plenaries for, you know, which are really of interesting topics. I think that way we are proud to, you know, celebrate this. Truly, we are celebrating that interdisciplinary aspect of it, because the way we approach, see, the difference of any other institution and what ATRI is, that no one has looked biodiversity or conservation in a holistic point of view. So what we bring in is, whether it is a social science, social sciences or natural sciences, or for that matter, we look at it in a way which is a very holistic one. And how do we really link that with various things? You know, we link all of them and then see the nuances of it, you know, whether it is in the sociological way, anthropological way. So all aspects are embedded. So we are just trying to bring that, showcase this during the event. And that is where we want to people to start, you know, start understanding the impact of how they can contribute to the ecological, you know, environmental kind of practices which they can adopt. So it's a very exciting time. Wholeheartedly, it is a public event. We are wanting more students, and in fact, we are inviting students from all across, whether it's students from colleges, come from schools, to come in large number and really understand the work. And we are doing that to our level best, and we are looking forward for that. Yeah.
So I'll definitely attend. So that is my last question for the day, and thank you for your time. It's been a very valuable 25 odd minutes.
Great. Yeah. So that's nice, and very nice speaking to you. I would congratulate you guys for the work you've been doing through your foundation. And I find it very interesting that being such, and that's what we need. We need youth like you to really take that such initiatives and drive that awareness. And all the questions you asked are all addressed if people like you are really propagating this and trying to build that awareness and trying to bring in that moment kind of a thing in the youth. That's great job done by you guys. I appreciate your work, and all the best to you guys. Yeah.
Thank you.